This is Kevin Harlan. This Friday, the NBA on Prime crew and I are back with another exciting Emirates NBA Cup doubleheader. First, Bam Adebayo and the Heat take on Jalen Brunson and the Knicks. Then, Steph Curry and the Warriors square off against Wemby and the Spurs. If you're not a Prime member, just sign up for a free 30-day trial. Heat Knicks, Warriors Spurs. Coverage starts Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, only on Prime. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Du bist ein Raider, der sich unter der Erde niedergelassen hat. Doch jetzt musst du an die Oberfläche zurückkehren. Dorthin, wo die Ark-Maschinen umherstreifen. Wenn du mutig genug bist, wer weiß, was du da oben findest. Ark Raiders. Ein Multiplayer-Extraction-Abenteuer-Videospiel. Jetzt erhältlich für PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X und S sowie PC.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, my goodness. Are we in the second week of May 21? We are. Man, oh man. Time sure does fly, don't she? Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what? We're back just in time because our guest this week was only available this week. And we're lucky to have snagged this very special person for my podcast, That Josh Arnold Podcast. Our guest this week, well, of course it's you. Oh my goodness, will you look at you. A little time has passed, but boy, you look better than ever, and I hope you're feeling well. Oh my goodness. I guess it's spring, right? And the weather, well, I hope wherever you are, it's delightful, and that you're enjoying the out of doors and maybe doing some spring cleaning inside and maybe starting some landscaping outside, whatever you're up to. Oh my gosh, I hope it's making you feel good and comfortable and happy where you are. I you know, that's important, isn't it? I hope that your house is a home, I guess is what I'm trying to say. A house is just a building, my friend, but a home, well, that's a whole other place, isn't it? That's right. This is why you tune in. This is why you listen for little nuggets of wisdom like that. Real quick, I must tell you about this week's sponsor of That Josh Arnold Podcast. One of my favorite things, I'm going to be honest. This week's sponsor, a moist towelette. Oh, what? I mean, let's say you're having ribs at a restaurant. What are you going to do without that moist towelette? You have to have them. I mean, they're just a must. Sometimes they're called wet naps. And when I would go to a barbecue place with my family, I would make a joke about how I like wet naps. And the joke would, well, let's just say my parents didn't really like me telling it. I'm sure I was a teenage boy when I would do this joke, so I you can imagine what it was about, and I was proud of it because I made it up, and it was dirty, but not so dirty that I would get in trouble. I would just get sort of Joshua, that kind of thing. But anyway, I love a moist towelette. Lemon scented are fine, and I also used to do a bit where a girlfriend of mine a while back had a six-year-old son, and he loved this bit. This would make him laugh. Whenever we were at a restaurant and there were moist towelettes, I would go to reach for one, but I would overshoot the little container of them, and I would grab a sugar packet, and I would open it up and pour the sugar all over my hands and start wiping my hands and go, "Oh, this is the worst moist towelette I've ever used." And he would howl. He couldn't believe how funny it was. You can try that. If you've got kids around, try the sugar moist towelette switcheroo, and I think it'll get big laughs. Anyway, I find moist towelettes to be very refreshing, and perhaps you will get to enjoy a moist towelette very soon. I hope you do. I hope I do as well. Well, as you can see, the basement is still unchanged down here. Some of these leaky pipes are still a-leaking, and some of these rodents are still a-rodenting. And, you know, it's got its charms down here. I wish I could eventually... I asked. I said, "Hey, look, for season two, can I have a studio?" And they said, "Well, of course you can't. Yeah, the basement is..." And so I'm still down here in the basement. But every now and again, well, I should say every week, we like to break free from the basement, don't we? And yes, maybe it's just in our minds. Remember Mr. Rogers? He had the little trolley that would take him into, what the heck was that called? Imaginary Land or whatever. I forget what he called it. But King Friday was there. The whole gang! Meow, meow, kitty, meow, and whatnot. Well, that's kind of what we have here, isn't it? And I say, what are we waiting for? Let's hop on board the brand new JA Express, or Arntrack, if you will. And oh, what a lovely ride it is. But there's a new thing. Where's it going to take us? That's what we don't know. So we'll chug along here until we get to our first stop. Now, if you're basing this just on sound effects, we're no longer traveling, but I want you. Here we are. Okay, we have stopped. That's the conductor is letting us know we've come to a stop. And, well, I look around and, my gosh, if we aren't in Vocabville. Oh, what a lovely place to be. I love Vocabville because it's where we learn a new vocabulary word. Now, this week's vocabulary word, I am certain some of you know, and I hope some of you use this word. It's one of my favorite words, and some of you, this will be new, and it's great, isn't it? Learning a new word, isn't it fun? So, this week's word here in Vocabville is a noun, and it's bacchanal. Bacchanal. I love this word. It's B-A-C-C-H-A-N-A-L. So that's B-A-C-C-H-A-N-A-L. I am a child. Bacchanal, it means, for those of you who are just learning about it, just a wild celebration, a crazy, out-of-control party, loud, cacophonous. Hey, that could almost be a vocabulary word of the week, couldn't it? Cacophonous just means noisy and loud and sort of chaotic and... Usually a bacchanal, booze aplenty, all right? The alcohol is flowing, and it's causing the guests of the party to be loud and, as I said, out of control. That would be a bacchanal, my friends. This isn't a cozy little tea party. I mean, this is like Andrew W.K. Throwing a house party on a lake. I mean, it's a bacchanal. Things are going to get crazy. So I love this word, bacchanal. It's something that were I to win an Academy Award, the bacchanal would be legendary. It would be nuts. So not that winning an Academy Award is that important. It's really not. But, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. What a terrific visit to Vocabville. Oh, my goodness. Not a lot of bacchanals in Vocabville, but Because they're, you know, look, let's be honest, the citizens of OCAPville are fairly refined, and some might say they can get a little snooty, but they're also friendly, and they don't condescend. You know what I mean? They'll use big words, but they're not trying to make us feel small or unintelligent. In fact, they trust us. If we don't know a word, we'll go look it up. And they just don't talk down to us. But they do expect us to rise a little bit to their level, to meet them halfway, if you will. It's a lovely, lovely area, and we will visit it again, I'm sure. So, but that's not it. The JA Express, otherwise known as the Arn Track, doesn't just make one stop anymore. Nope, we keep a chugging along. Where are we gonna go next? Oh my goodness. I told you there was construction happening, and new track has been laid, and new stations have been built in all kinds of counties, and where have we stopped now? My gosh, if we're not suddenly immersed in Comedy Corners. That's right! Comedy Corners is where we can talk about some of our favorite comedic things, whether it be stand-up or improv or sketch, anything that's sort of live comedy, not necessarily comedy films, because that's in a whole other burg, if you will, which I'm sure you'll find out about at some point, or comedy, humor books or anything like that. This is Comedy Corners, where we talk about the performance, the art of comedy. I've never been a big fan of comedians. I'm an artist, and therefore, I don't know. I just heard you tell a joke about your wiener, and that didn't take a whole lot of art. But anyway, and by the way, I do consider it to be, I don't know. Maybe not an art. I guess it's an art. Look, that's an argument that I'll get into at a Denny's with some open micers another time. We don't need to discuss it right now. So anyway, here at Comedy Corners, we celebrate comedy. And I want to let you know about these people. Do they make me laugh a lot. And for those of you who are familiar with them, I think you'll agree they're not for everybody, but they, to this day, still make me howl. I'm talking about the comedy duo of Nichols and May. This is Mike Nichols and Elaine May. And they were prominent in the 50s and 60s. So I was obviously, I was born in 1978, so I was not familiar with them until I became sort of a student of comedy, in my teenage years, or maybe a little younger. I always loved a comedy of all kinds, even, heck, as young as, 4 or 5 years old, I wanted to be a comedian. And so, but Nichols and May are fairly sophisticated and also not as widely known as, say, when you're a kid, you're kind of aware. You're definitely aware of the Three Stooges, and you're sort of aware of Laurel and Hardy and Abbott and Costello, and older comedy. Those things tend to get rerun a lot more. Nichols and May, their albums were quite popular, but they weren't. My parents didn't own them. I think they may have been. And my parents have great senses of humor. My dad was incredibly funny and loved comedy, and my mom has a terrific sense of humor. But it's funny. I recently was talking about Nichols and May. My mom didn't know who I was talking about. So I think they might be, I was going to say sort of, they were sort of out of my parents' league when it came, the stuff they were doing was fairly, would go over a lot of people's heads, and it was really ahead of their time. And if somebody told me, I watched their stuff and I didn't really get it, I couldn't really argue with them. But there are some things that they do that I really would love for you to check out. Nichols and May, a young couple, they would do improv. They were part of the original Second City and Compass players. And stuff. And so they got to know each other in Second City in Chicago, and they would perform live, and they would take the improvisations that they did live on stage and made up totally on the spot, and then they would take them behind the scenes and sort of sculpt them into sketches. So they would take those ideas and some of the lines and stuff, and they would chisel them until they were these fully formed, perfected comedy sketches, and then they would perform those sketches live and on albums. And they are hysterical. They're so funny. There's one in particular. There are some I really would like to tell you about. One is about a man who needs to get a funeral going for somebody in his family, and so he wants the $65 discounted funeral. I'm not gonna tell you guys much about. I'm not gonna get into specifics of jokes and stuff because I really would like you. But so he's talking to Elaine May, who's playing the funeral arranger, and hilarity ensues. There's also one where Elaine May, I would like you to look up this one. She calls her son who's away at college, and it's a wonderful and very funny and completely universal mother-son phone conversation. You know, it starts off the typical way. Why? I believe her first lines are, "This is your mother. Do you remember me?" So it's that. And you got to remember, too, some of this comedy may seem quaint now, but they were like the first people to do it. And that's always kind of fun when you watch old comedy. I watched an old W.C. Fields movie recently, and there was a gag in there. I don't exactly remember what it was, but I remember going, boy, that's one of the oldest gags ever. And then I went, wait a minute. He may have invented it. That may have been the first time audiences saw that joke. And so that's, I love stuff like that. There's another sketch where they are teenage lovers, kind of sitting on Lover's Lane and easing their way into a potential makeout session or more, and the awkwardness that comes from that. It's great. It's stellar stuff. Nichols and May, they eventually stopped working together, and they did live Broadway shows, and it was a hit. But Elaine said, you know what, I can't do the same stuff over and over. And so they split up, and they had a bit of a falling out when they worked on a play that she had written together. But they eventually became friends again, and they for the rest of their lives, they consulted each other. Mike Nichols became a very famous director. He directed The Graduate and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and he directed all the way up until his death just a few years ago. He directed The Birdcage and Wolf and Primary Colors. A terrific. He directed one of my favorite movies based on a play called Closer, and it is brutal. It's just the emotion and the raw humanity of it, and it gets ugly. Check out Closer if you've never seen it, with Julia Roberts and Jude Law and Natalie Portman and Clive Owen. It's a tour de force. And Elaine May also directed and wrote plenty. Elaine May wrote The Birdcage, the screenplay for it, and she wrote some other wonderful things. She sort of went into Hollywood purgatory for a while because she wrote and directed Ishtar, which is one of the most classic Hollywood flops of all time, with Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman. It's a movie that I've talked about it on this podcast. I think it's unjustly hated, and it's actually pretty funny. So, but she was definitely put in Hollywood jail for a while. Anyway, check out some Nichols and May. And while you're at it, check out, this was like one of the first Emmy award ceremonies in the 50s, obviously. Television was super new and still not in every household. And this was like single-digit Emmy Awards, like the 8th annual or whatever. I forget exactly. But during the award ceremony, Elaine May comes out and she's going to present. And she very elegantly and professionally says, and I'm paraphrasing, because if this is online, you have to look this up. I remember seeing it on an old television special, but she goes, "You know, we tonight we celebrate the excellence of everybody in this this field and everything. And then she goes, but what about the other people? What about the folks who are mediocre in this field and year after year produce garbage? And this had to have been one of the first times where somebody took the piss out of award ceremonies. And so the audience is howling. And she goes, well, right now we're going to celebrate one of those men. And she said the winner for the most mediocre television producer or whatever. And Mike Nichols is in the audience, and he stands up, and he's very happy, and he makes the walk to the stage, and he gets up, and he goes, oh, my gosh, this is just terrific. To be acknowledged as being so average is just fine. And it's just wonderful. It's very, very funny. And I really implore you to look these things up. Nichols and May, just one of the greatest comedy duos in history. And their stuff, it holds up. It holds up. It's still funny today. And hey, if you watch it and you go, you know what? I don't quite see that. That's okay. It's all right. That doesn't mean that I'm better than you, okay? There are other reasons why I'm better than you. There are... No, obviously it's comedy. All right. You're going to like some, you're not going to like some. And a lot of times we're going to agree, and sometimes we're going to disagree. But do give them a look. Nichols and May. And that Emmy speech came to mind recently because, we had award season essentially recently, and it was a weird one because of the pandemic and whatnot. The Oscars, usually a big event viewed by many, tens of millions. And, this year wasn't the case, was it? And there are a lot of reasons why. There are a lot of reasons, a lot of theories being thrown around of, nobody saw the nominees. People didn't go to the theater. Well, okay, but a lot of those nominees were available streaming platforms all over, and a lot of people have those streaming platforms. And then the people said, people don't like to watch the Academy Awards because they don't want to be preached to by Hollywood celebrities. Fair enough. I don't necessarily like, I don't like being preached to by anybody, let alone Hollywood celebrities. So that makes sense too. And other theory, why would somebody watch a live broadcast when they can just watch the highlights the next day on the internet? Also very fair. There are a lot of reasons why it seems people don't care as much as they used to. When I was a kid, this was a big deal. The Oscars were a big deal, and they were a big deal to me. I would do my best to see. I would say starting in my teenage years, I would do my best to see every nominee and decide for myself what I thought was best picture and who was best actress and what was the best screenplay and all that stuff. And then even into my 20s, I would talk about the nominees and the awards at length with some of my best friends. Jared Thompson, who runs the Comedy Attic Comedy Club in Bloomington, Indiana. In fact, a couple of times I stayed over at his house. I would perform. We would do a fun thing. He would book me at the Comedy Club Oscar weekend, and then I would stay an extra night at his house. And he and his wonderful wife, Dana, and their kids and I, we would watch the Oscars, and we had ballots, and we would fill them out. And sometimes we'd say, all right, this is who's going to win. This is who should win, but this is who's going to win, that kind of thing. And we would agree or disagree. And it was a lot of fun. And it meant something to us. Jared's a huge cinephile, as am I. And so we love discussing it. But I have to tell you, and that stuff happened in my 30s. But now I'm 40. I'll be 43 in a few days. And I don't care anymore. I don't know what's happened. I don't know if it's an age thing where you kind of stop caring. Stuff that used to be important to you just isn't anymore. Other things are. I'll be honest. The glitter and I'm going to say dignity of the Academy Awards. The shimmer sort of started to dull a long time ago for me when the year that Schindler's List came out, Ralph Fiennes was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for the incredibly evil Nazi that he played, and he was nominated. And when I saw that nomination, I went, "Oh, well, he's going to win." What he was amazing in that. Watching that movie every time he's on screen, the temperature in the room drops 30 degrees. he's so chilling and defective in that role. Who else could possibly win? And he didn't win. And so that's fine. But the issue I had was a lot of Academy voters, and some of them were anonymous and some weren't, came out and said, I couldn't vote for him. He was too, I remember this infuriating me. He was too realistic in that role. And I remember as like a, when the hell was that? What was that, 93? So I was 15. And I remember as a 15-year-old going, isn't that the point? Aren't we awarding people these awards because they were so realistic in the roles? They were so good at pretending to be these other people that's why they win? What? And that's the first time I realized, oh, this isn't necessarily about who was the best. It's also about who made people feel the best. Or, and then I started really kind of researching it, and I went, oh my gosh, so many people have won based on other things besides their performance. And the opposite would also happen. Do you remember when My Cousin Vinny, Marissa Tomei, won Best Supporting Actress for her role in that? And she's wonderful in it. And when Jack Palance came out and said her name, there were a lot of people who went, oh my gosh, he must have read the wrong name. And he didn't. She won. The most votes went to her, and for good reason. But people couldn't believe that such a, what they considered slight role or light, it was comedic and it was sweet and it was light. It wasn't some awful, depressing, crazy role like Ralph Fiennes performed. So don't mistake me here. I'm not saying that one super dramatic role deserves an award. That's all who should win. What I'm saying is the person who encapsulated the character the best. And in those years, I think Marissa Tomei encapsulated her character the best. I don't remember exactly who the other nominees were. I recently looked them up, but I can't give you the list now. And but people thought, oh, well, that must have been a mistake. No, it wasn't. She earned it. So all these things. And then I also went, well, that's just my opinion that she earned it. And slowly but surely over the years, even though I still enjoyed the Oscars and I still enjoyed watching them, I had issues with all of them. And but over the years, that shimmer really started to dull. And I started to see, you know, the flaws in them. And then I went, why am I so invested in this? Why do I care that much? All I care about are movies being good and enjoying myself and admiring great art and performances and direction and writing and all that stuff. So that's what I do now. I don't care about the Oscars anymore. And that theory has never, I haven't seen that come up yet this year. They don't care because they don't care about the politics, or they don't care because they didn't see the movies or whatever. I don't know. For me, it's, I don't care because I don't think it really matters that much. Whether a group of people said something was good or not. Because it's not always about the art. It's a lot of social politics and a lot of other things come into play. I mean, and there's also a glaring amount of hypocrisy in Hollywood. I used to always, this used to make me laugh out loud because of how much hypocrisy. So the red carpet is obviously a big deal. I never cared for the red carpet. I just wanted to see who won the awards. And I you know what I wanted to see? Speeches. I love when people thank other people and stuff like that. I just love that. So the red carpet, here's what would happen. You would have these A-list actresses come out and they go, you know, this year's so wonderful. So many women have done so many wonderful things for film this year, and a lot more females are behind the camera, and finally we're getting our due, and women are making as much as the men actors are, and the roles this year were just so juicy and wonderful, and everything's great. And the person interviewing them would go, oh yes, isn't that wonderful? Yes, finally women are getting what? Who are you wearing? and all of a sudden the conversation would go to their dress, the most materialistic thing, and inevitably the actress would go, "Oh my gosh, this is a Versace. I don't know who makes dresses. This is, oh yes, and I had this made, and it was and this necklace comes from." Wait a minute. So you're talking about, to me, it just seemed really bizarre. There's a balance there, I know. Yes, we can appreciate the work of the actress, and I guess we can also appreciate what they're wearing, but they haven't quite figured out the balance. Right now, they're still kind of mutually exclusive, in my opinion. To me, I don't know that you can go, everything you did this year was so wonderful for feminism. Now, what color shoes are those? That's a weird thing to me. Maybe I'm the only one. I don't know. And I think there is a lot to be said for some people just don't care to hear about what. In my ideal, the ideal Oscars for me occurred. It did occur. It happened. It was the year that Heath Ledger won for The Dark Knight. And the only I'm not saying that these were the ideal Oscars because he won. I do think he should have. But what they did that year is something that apparently me and only like a few other viewers enjoyed, because they haven't done it since. But to me, this is what the Oscars should be. When it came to the best performances, when it came to best actor, best actress, there are five nominees, five or six. I apologize. I don't remember exactly. I think, and they had five people come out and speak to the five nominees. So I remember best actor, they had Anthony Hopkins come out, and they had all these terrific actors line up. And one by one, each actor would go. I remember Anthony Hopkins, Brad Pitt, "What you did in the movie Benjamin Button was amazing, and here's why." And they gave like a 2-minute synopsis of why that person was nominated that year. And it was a total celebration of the arts of cinema. There may have been some political speeches. I don't remember exactly. But I just, the way they did it, it was like, yes, this is what this should be. A celebration. And I really feel like most award ceremonies have lost that feel. It's not about the art and the mediums anymore. It's about other stuff. And that stuff, I know it bores me. And, anyway. The Oscars don't mean as much to me as they used to, and awards don't. And I've been up for awards, and I've won some, and it does feel good. It feels good to be nominated. I remember I wrote a script for the Larry Sanders Show when I was in college. We had to write write scripts. If you were that was one part of my major, and you had to write scripts for existing television shows. And I wrote a script for the Larry Sanders Show, and it was submitted to the Webbies is what it was called, because I went to Webster University. And so they would have awards for best student film and best painting by a student, stuff like that. So this was best screenplay written by a student, and I was nominated. I didn't win, but it was fun. It was great to be with your peers and, hey, man, yeah, you wrote a cool thing, and so did you, and wasn't this fun? I really liked it. But in the scheme of things, It doesn't matter too much. Awards and it's the ceremony to me. That's what matters. I love that. The winners don't matter as much to me anymore. I love the movie Nomadland, and I'm like the only one of that I know. Now, I've had some people, I talked about it on the air one morning on the big show, and I said, you know what? I love Nomadland. Everybody else on the show hated it who saw it. And I got a couple emails saying, you know what? No, I liked it too. And I saw what you saw, that kind of thing, the merits in it and everything. But I would never argue with somebody who said they didn't care for it. Why? It doesn't matter too much. Oh, man, okay. Well, I'm sorry you didn't enjoy it, but what did you like? That's the kind of stuff you guys know me. I like talking about things we all enjoy. And if you didn't enjoy it, oh, what didn't you like? It's the conversation and the ceremony surrounding art that I enjoy. It's not the prizes themselves, or certainly not, whether the winner agrees or disagrees with the president. Good Lord. Okay, so, something else that's tangentially related to this. Kids today get somewhat of a bad rap because of things like participation trophies. You know what I mean? It's these kids today, they all get participation. They get trophies just for showing up. When I was young, I had to win to actually get a trophy. Fair enough. I'm not a big participation trophy guy. Why? Because I think you should aspire to winning the trophy. If you don't win one year, you can go, you know what, man, next year, I'm going for it. I'm going to win that trophy. And if you don't, the year after that, you go, I got to work a little harder. And to me, it's incentivizing. Participation trophies, I get not wanting to hurt kids' feelings, but I also think, but here's the problem with it, all right? It's not the kid's fault that they're getting a participation trophy. It's the parents' fault. If the parents, 20 years ago, if somebody said, hey, maybe we should give all the kids trophies, if the other parents went, what are you talking about? We were never doing that. And then the people who complain about the participation trophies, to me, are the people who invented the participation trophy. The kids didn't. Now, yes, the kids may have gone, oh, boy, I sure wish I had gotten a trophy. But to me, this is lazy. And by the way, feel free to rip your radio out or throw your phone into a lake or whatever when I say, because this is going to anger some of you, because I'm not a parent. I have no idea what I'm talking about. or I should say this. I may think I know what I'm talking about, but I don't have the actual experience to back that up, okay? So I totally know that. But what I do think is lazy, insecure parenting may have created the participation trophy in here. And my producer Jason is a parent, a wonderful dad, and he and I have talked about parenting a lot. So I'd be interested to see if he gives me a thumbs up or a thumbs down here. But what I mean is, when your kid says, I wish I had gotten a trophy, instead of going, you did for participating, shouldn't a parent go, you know what, honey, next year, work a little harder and try, you know what, we'll practice more, and if you really try and you really work hard, there's a strong chance you are going to get that trophy. To me, that's what I would do as a parent. If you didn't do that, but to me, the participation trophy is not meant to ease the feelings of the kid as much as it is to ease the feelings of the parent. I don't have to discuss some of the harder things of life with my child because I can just hand them this trophy for showing up. I prefer incentivizing those things. And I also would not care to get a participation trophy. I really wouldn't. To me, that smacks of humoring me and placating me, and I don't want to be... No, thanks. I don't need it. Now, again, I'll be 43. So it's... I mean, I don't... Winning things is, of course, nice, but... Yeah, I don't have to have it. To me, there are other ways to win than by actually receiving a trophy. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're listening and you're part of the podcasting Judges of America and you want to give me some award, I will show up. But just having fun with you guys is really the winning. And playing, doing your best. So maybe that's, you know what? Maybe that's the happy medium. Instead of a participation trophy, let's give out some trophies. You did your best. And that might not go to every player, but boy, will it go to those players with heart who left everything, who really tried. That was always the thing that I was raised with. I was bad in gym, all right? I've always been uncoordinated. I like playing some sports. I'm just not good at it. And plus, when I was a kid, my weight fluctuated. Sometimes I'd be skinny, but a lot of times I was a chubby little dude. So, and that was all through school. And so, like now I'll look at some pictures from like my junior year and go, man, I was thin and didn't know it. I thought I was fat, but I was thin. And I wouldn't listen to the people who go, why are you drinking a Slim Fast at lunch? You're thin. And I go, no, I've got to lose some weight. I had something going on. So anyway, my point is I was not good at sports, but I would get, sometimes I would get like C's in gym. And my dad would go, oh, you must not have tried very hard, because he would talk to my gym teachers. And there were times where I got A's in gym and sucked. I was bad, but my gym teacher went, you know what? He's giving it his all. I can't fault the kid for not having bigger muscles or having better coordination. He's really, really trying. And that's when I would get good grades in gym. And that's, to me, that's a really good teacher to be able to pick that out and go, okay, he was last running the mile. But I mean, boy, he never once stopped. That kind of thing. And my dad always said, if you try, and he coached my soccer team for a long time. And he knew the difference between me being bad because I wasn't trying and me being bad because I just didn't have the ability. But I was working my butt off. And he knew. And he would go, man, you really tried hard. And he was so, and he really made me feel good about it. He did. It feels good to try. Sometimes losing doesn't feel bad. It feels good to do your best. Hell, the ending of Rocky, that's what that's about. If you remember in the first Rocky, and I, you know, spoiler alert, he doesn't win. But you know what he doesn't do? He makes it all the way through. He's never knocked out, and he's never TKO'd. I think it was a decision at the end of. Anyway, the point of the movie was, he made it round after round. He was still standing. And yes, his eyes are swollen shut and he looks insane as he's screaming for the love of his life. But he's still, wouldn't it have been funny if that movie, if he had been screaming, Adrian, Adrian, and she runs up in the ring and finally gets a look at him and he looks so gross and she just goes, oh God, I'll talk to you in like 20 minutes. And then it just ends. Anyway, he did it. He didn't get a trophy. He didn't get any of the. He didn't get an. He didn't win. He didn't get the championship belt. He lost, but he won. Oh, I love that. I love it. Anyway, enough of that. Well, no, I guess I do. I do want to say one other.
Whatever.
Oh, fine. I'll move on. It does bring me to a new segment that's going to happen every now and again. And I think this is fun. It's super nerdy, but I hope you enjoy it. It's what I call If Oscar Had Any Guts. Oh, yes. I know that song sounds familiar, but it's still here. It's just going to be used in different ways now than it was. If Oscar Had Any Guts. Now, what this is, I'm going to talk about a performance that I think should have been acknowledged by the Academy. And by the way, I realized the irony of me going on and on about how the awards in the end don't really matter. And now I'm doing a segment about, well, how come this guy didn't get an award? Look, I never said I wasn't full of it. All right. I've never claimed that once in my life. But no, I think this is a fun thing. This is, in my opinion, somebody who should have at least been nominated for an Academy Award, and I think should have won. This the year is 1986, all right? And I submit that a nominee for Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture should have gone to Bill Moseley in The Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. That's right. And I am dead serious. I mean this in all earnestness. Bill Moseley played a character called Chop Top in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. and his performance is as good as any film portrayal that year. And I'll prove it to you. Actually, I won't, but I'll what I should say is, and I'll bloviate on my opinion further. Here are the nominees for 1986 and actor in a supporting role. Don Ameche for Cocoon. A fine, look, and these are fine performances. Well, this one I haven't seen. Klaus Maria Brandauer in Out of Africa. I know, I haven't seen Out of Africa. I have the book and I haven't read it yet. So I'm going to read the book and then watch the movie. I'll get back to you. I'll let you know if old Klaus deserved his nominee. William Hickey in Pritzi's Honor. Yes, he should have been nominated. You guys all know William Hickey. He's the uncle in Christmas Vacation. The Blessing. That guy. Robert Loggia in Jagged Edge. A fine thriller. And Eric Roberts in Runaway Train. Now, if you've ever seen Runaway Train, it's a fun movie. And he's completely good. Eric Roberts is good in it. But Bill Moseley as Chop Top in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, that performance is so bold and insane. If you don't know, if you've not seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, there's a good chance you're not going to, because if you were into that kind of movie, you would have already seen it, I'm sure. But he plays essentially the brother of Leatherface, the chainsaw-wielding maniac that's the face of, pun intended, of the franchise. So, Chop Top, he walks into this radio station, and he demands to hear this recording of a murder that he helped facilitate. And the DJ's like, what's going on? This guy's a weirdo. And he plays a man with a metal plate in his head, and he does the weirdest thing. He has a hanger that's kind of folded, a wire hanger, and he scratches the skin on his scalp where the metal plate is, and he just kind of picks at it, and then it's a really bizarre thing, and he's so menacing, but also so funny and odd, and I'm telling you, he deserved an Academy Award nomination. When you watch him, you go, who is this person? And also, no one else could play that role. No, I don't know. I don't know who's better than Bill Moseley in this role. I mean, you know, if you're a horror fan, you know Bill Moseley from a ton of horror movies. He's a Rob Zombie staple. He's in the Firefly trilogy, House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. He's a huge part of the genre itself. And I just think if Oscar had any guts, they would have gone, you know what? This guy was as good as anybody. And it's a weird, I'm telling you, this performance is so wonderfully bizarre. You're going to get a kick out of it. It's a grisly movie. So I'm not necessarily saying, hey, you guys should go watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, because it's pretty gnarly. But he was overlooked. All right. So if Oscar had any guts, they would have nominated Bill Moseley for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 in 1986. By the way, Don Ameche won for playing an old man in Cocoon, which was a hard role for him because he was a very old man. But I think that's one of the cases where they gave it to Don Ameche for his career, not necessarily that one role. Again, he's fine in that role. He's a terrific actor. But he's just as good in Trading Places as he is in Cocoon, and he wasn't nominated for that. So anyway, I'm going to start something also where some weeks I'll just do all of your questions, but other weeks we're just going to have one question of the week. And this question has come to me from a handful of people. And I apologize for not reading your names, if that's why you sent in the question, because you wanted to hear your name on the podcast. Well, you know what? You didn't win this week. Here's your participation trophy. So, the question of the week is, where in the heck did Aruba Ray come from? Now, if you listen to the Bob and Tom Show, you know that occasionally I'll dip into this character named Aruba Ray. And, hey, it's Aruba Ray. And he's real smarmy, and he runs a bar called Aruba Rays in Aruba, and he very shady, very questionable work ethic, very questionable behavior. He often says, if you need somebody to bury a body, I've got all this. He can do it, all right? He's not a good man. Now, Aruba Ray originated one morning on the Bob and Tom Show when we were doing our Allie Breen segment. And Allie Breen, some of you will remember this, but many have asked about this. Allie Breen did her one, it's one of my favorite things on the show. She calls in once a week and reads us letters from the Lovelorn, and we do our best to answer them. And usually our answers are ridiculous and not helpful at all. I tend to be sort of serious during it because I'm so fascinated by relationships and stuff like that I kind of give real answers. But it's so fun, that segment. And anyway, usually when the segment is ending, Tom will ask, hey, Allie, where are you performing next? And one week early on in her calling in, it was one of her first segments, Tom said, well, where are you going to be this weekend? And she said, oh, I'm doing shows at a comedy club in Aruba called Aruba Rays. And I laughed because immediately this image of some guy, hey, I'm Aruba Ray. I just did it. And the voice is kind of, it's inadvertent, but it's got kind of a Love Brothers feel to it, for those of you who are loyal fans to the Bob and Tom Show. And it's also a little bit of a comedian named Bob Biggerstaff, who's a friend of mine. And we would always, and Greg, he's one of Greg Warren's best friends. And we always, hey, buddy, like he talks like that. And so we would always go, hey, Bob, whenever we see him, because he does kind of talk like that at times. And so it's a little bit of Biggerstaff, but it's got that Love Brothers grease on it, I'm going to say. And and he is, and Aruba Ray is a real man. He really does run a comedy club there, and by most accounts, a very nice guy and a very legit business owner. So we've kind of run into problems because since he is a real guy, I don't feel like I should do a ton with him. I would be doing more with him, and the idea of my Aruba Ray is that he's in Aruba because he's hiding. He can't be on the mainland of the U.S. and he can't be in other places because he's wanted. And so he's hiding in Aruba and running a very gross establishment. So that's how Aruba Ray started. Just as soon as she said it, I laughed. And then I went into this character of I just started improvising who this guy was and how he had this sordid history. So it's very fun to do. And people seem to like him. But I can't do a ton with him because what I need to do is contact Aruba Ray, the real Aruba Ray. Maybe this is the way to go. And go, hey, man, I've been doing this silly character called Aruba Ray. Do you mind if I do it or what? But I don't know. I don't know how to handle it. And also, I do get nervous that he does creep into Love Brothers territory a little too much. And I know the Love Brothers aren't necessarily doing new stuff, but I want Aruba to be his own thing, so I'm still kind of trying to figure him out a little bit. Now, if you like, feel free to send me a message at joshpodcast@bobandtom.com because my thought is, well, what if I just changed his name? It could be Aruba Ray is so perfect, that name. The R there, there's that slight alliteration of R and Ray, and it just works so well that I don't know if I changed him to Aruba Pete or Aruba Dave or something. I mean, the explanation would be that he had to change his name because he was getting, you know, people were looking for him and they were getting too close. But let me know if what you think. If you're a fan of Aruba Ray, and if you're not, that's totally fine. He's completely obnoxious and he says some dark things, so maybe he's not your cup of tea. But if you are, how do you feel about a name change? I'd like to hear your opinion on that. Jason is saying Aruba J. Aruba J. Hey, it's me, Aruba J. That's not bad because it also it's the first initial of my name. I will consider Aruba J. So let me know your thoughts. Or maybe if we change it to Bahama Ray, or I don't know. There are a couple different ways to go. But if I do make a change, I feel like I can do a lot more with them. If if that's what people would like. So anyway. That's the question. Great question. And, well, you know, I talked a lot about awards.
Yeah, too much.
Hey, I'm just, what do you want from me? I got rolling, and I had a lot to say.
Yeah, I'll say.
Oh, just giving me such a hard time. Man, oh, man. I'll try to keep it briefer next time.
Well, you'd have to.
Oh, there's no winning with you. Whew. So, we're still going to cap off every That Josh Arnold podcast in the way that we have been with what we could work on this week. Oh, listen to that bass line. How about that? Boy, this sounds like practice. This doesn't sound like somebody is like playing a song. I mean, who heard this and went, oh, we got to lay that down. This is somebody browsing at a guitar center. Anyway, we may have a different song. We're trying some things out. So we may have a different song for this segment next time. No, I take that back. We're definitely going to have a different song. Or I could even put it this way. Next time we're going to have a song, not somebody screwing around with a bass guitar. So, I think this is fun, and I really would love if you gave this a shot. And if you do, please tell me about it. I say this week, and again, I'm full of it because I did go on earlier about how awards, in a sense, don't really matter. But I think recognizing somebody for their accomplishments does. So what I'm asking you to do, and I'm going to do this, is I would like you to make a certificate or an award or something for somebody in your life. Just take a couple seconds or, you know, a couple minutes, and it could be anything. Tape a paperclip to a pencil and hand it to the person. Go, you know what? This is your award for being the friendliest office member at our job. You know, that kind of thing. It's going to be fun. It's going to be silly. And it's going to put a smile on their face. But also go, you know what? I know this is a silly award, but I really do appreciate every time I walk by this desk, you're smiling and you ask me how I am and how my kids are. And I just want you to know it really does mean a lot. And so here's your award. This is a fun, nice thing. Does the award itself matter? No. And that's the whole point. It could be a folded post-it note, just in like a triangle or whatever. And just go, here is your trophy for being always on time. You know what, daughter, because I know all parents just refer to their kids as son and daughter. Daughter, you sure have kept your room clean the last 2 weeks. Here's your award, your trophy for cleanest room. It's just a nice, fun thing to do this week. Give a little recognition and be silly. Just give them a little token, a physical trophy. Because, hey, award season has come and gone again. Oh, I'm sure it hasn't. I mean, heck, the country music industry has an award ceremony every 2 weeks or something. You know, and fine, get together, celebrate, whatever. But go ahead and do this yourself this week. And, you know, I think it would be a good... Bye!
Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling take you behind the scenes of one of the greatest shows of all time.
Their ultimate rewatch podcast. We're in the midst of season 7 and...
Hold on. Obviously, we had a very successful television show for 10 years. That was Superman-based.
But we had to make everyone believe that you were Clark.
I gotta be honest, I was surprised at the end of this episode that I wasn't...
I was too!
Talkville, the Smallville Rewatch Podcast.
I'm not sure I knew when I was filming it that I was not me.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.